Well, it's already gone into its seventh printing, and as I record these statements today, the book just came out. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is Scott Ott with Bill Whittle and Stephen Green, and this episode of Right Angle is brought to you by the members at BillWhittle.com. Folks, the book is coming out the day that we record this thing, and they've already sold a million copies, according to Simon & Schuster. And you may think that there is no way that we could know anything about this book because it just came out this day, but I happen to have gotten my hands on a copy of Bob Woodward's new book called Fear, about the Trump administration, and either that or I just made this with a magic marker in between sessions of shooting Right Angle.
I was going to say it is a much too interesting cover, much, much better cover than they could possibly have put on a book like that. Because that I would buy.
It's got a little Hunter S. Thompson kind of flair to it, I think.
Oh, I was going to say it's got a little Charlie Manson vibe going on.
It does. In any case, and I, you know, my apologies to David Limbaugh, who actually sent me this signed copy of his book that I then covered up with this cover that I made by myself. Gentlemen, this is the biggest thing in all the world. And of course, as Stephen Green, I believe, pointed out in our members-only episode this week, a lot of people in Washington are buying the book, snapping it up just so that they can go to the index and see if they're mentioned in the alphabetical listings back there. Obviously, I only know what everybody else knows, or as Barack Obama used to say, I just know what I've seen on the news. And what I've seen on the news is that the book isn't so much about Donald Trump or the Trump policy or the Trump administration so much as it is about the kind of people who work in the White House and the way they live their lives in this kind of ongoing political soap opera. So what we've seen so far is that the book is long on comments from people who anonymously claim to be saving the country from this this prevaricating blunderer, President Trump. And yet, for whatever reason, they don't want attention drawn to their own efforts to save these great United States of America, and so they're quoted anonymously. And even though Bob Woodward apparently has hours upon hour, I would guess hundreds of hours of audio recordings of these conversations he's had with people, we in the public trust Bob Woodward to give us the truth and to secure those tapes so that we don't have to be subjected to the behind the scenes stuff. Stephen Green, how does one weigh such a book? Bob Woodward made his initial reputation with the Watergate investigation, became a hero to the journalistic world, and almost it's like a proverb now, and everything since Watergate has been something or other gate. And now he comes out with Feargate about the Trump administration. Do you ignore the book? Do you read the book? Do you take it with a grain of salt? How does one reasonably evaluate something that's now sold a million copies on day one?
Well, you ask how to weigh it. And since Woodward puts out one of these White House insider books, what, about every 24 months? Is that about right?
Or 24 hours, whatever.
Well, yeah, it seems that way. I think the right way to weigh them is probably by the pound on your way to the landfill.
Yeah.
Honestly, Woodward, because of his, you know, Watergate reputation, I tried reading what I think was his first book on the Clinton administration. So, you know, this is probably came out in 93 or 94, and I believe it was called The Agenda. And the big shocking reveal of The Agenda is that the Clinton administration really had no agenda. There was all these random things they wanted to do, and there was such a hurry to do it that the first year of the Clinton administration, if you'll recall, was just a mess. It took that White House quite a while to find its footing. And so that wasn't exactly a big revelation. We'd seen the Clinton campaign and we'd heard the stories out of Arkansas. What a great book does is make, and I don't care if it's fiction or nonfiction, what a great book does is make you go, wow, I never thought about that before. I never realized that before. I never looked at something in that way before. And by that measure, I'm not sure if Woodward has ever written a great book, because I think what we're going to get out of this one, and again, I haven't read it, and it's about a 95% chance that I'm not going to read it, but I'll glean what I need to from everybody else who at least claims to have read it. We're going to learn learn two things from this new Woodward book. One is that the Trump White House is chaos, but we know this. What you have to keep in mind is that Trump seems to thrive on chaos. I mean, he started off living his entire life in the tabloids in the 1980s and never stopped. His businesses have been on this financial roller coaster from almost day one. This is a guy who winged it. He winged his way to the presidency. This is a guy who thrives on chaos. So when we learn, to overuse that word, that his White House is chaotic, well, fish swim in water. This is what he does. It's how he operates. It seems to work for him most of the time. And the other thing we're going to learn, and this is where your weighing becomes more of a serious issue, we're going to learn that there are people inside the White House and outside the White House in official Washington who will do or say most anything to discredit this president or to discredit his policies, even though we're starting to see some very tangible, very real, and extremely awesome results. And I think that's the thing we need to weigh as we weigh this book.
You know, Stephen just made me think, Bill, of the one of the arguments that people who believe in the idea of intelligent design rather than Darwinian evolution, one of the arguments that they will bring forward is that random changes at the cellular or subcellular level are more likely to kill the host organism or the subject than they are to produce anything salutary in its life or something that can be passed on in a beneficial way to subsequent generations. And yet it occurs to me that the people like Bob Woodward would have us believe that somehow this White House teeters on the brink of chaos at all times, and yet somehow they managed to get things done that have been part of the Republican agenda for decades that previous Republican administrations have failed to get done. Would you recommend that people read this book so that they can understand how the left thinks, or is it just not even worth thinking about?
Let me just very quickly start with the evolution issue. It is true that most mutations cause disadvantageous qualities to emerge and usually kills the individual that suffers the mutation, and that mutation is taken out of the gene pool. But the ones that are able to provide an advantage are passed on, so it's more of a ratchet, really, than a dice roll. It's a ratcheting series of dice rolls where the wins are kept and the losses are discarded. Now, the issue of chaos and this sense that, my God, there's no one driving this thing, history is made in the margins. You know, that's where change is. I mean, if you want to say that Donald Trump is running a chaotic White House, okay, but the Israeli the American embassy to Israel is now in Jerusalem, and that tells the Palestinians that this whole idea of if you just throw enough rocks and wait long enough, you're gonna go back to the houses that you never had. No. And if chaos means, a series of insulting tweets back and forth, and today we find out that Kim Jong-un wrote, by all accounts, an exceedingly polite, pleasant, and warm letter asking for another meeting with the President of the United States, that's chaos? Okay. If chaotic economic growth is 4% and structured and ordered and well-planned and very, 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 very highly educated economic growth is 1%, then I'm with the chaos. And and on we go. I remember a group called ISIS being in the news all the time because they were beheading people. The previous president, in an extremely intelligent and well-mannered and very erudite form, warned ISIS when we were about to launch an airstrike, and we now chaotically just launched the airstrike. And turns out these guys are not irreplaceable, and turns out they just really pretty much not here anymore. So to answer your question is, what is the effect of this book is going to have? And it's like none, and we all know it. Progressives will buy it as furniture. They're going to buy it the same way they buy a very nice vase or something. It's going to go in a position of high visibility so that they can show it off at their next cocktail party, but they won't read it. And we've talked about this so many times before, Scotty. They want to tell me that the Trump White House is chaotic. Well, then I'm saying we need more chaos. They're telling us that Donald Trump may have some degree of moral turpitude, to which I am just shocked to hear. And I don't care. I don't care about any of it. I care about the results, and the results have been certainly B plus, maybe even A minus in terms of what you could actually hope for. So bring it on, Bob. You know, there's nothing like reading a cutting edge book from a guy whose finger is so deftly on the pulse of America today, whose breakout role and only claim to fame happened 45 years ago.
Bill, you made me think of the Lincoln's quote about Grant's drinking.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Well, it is it's tough because on the one hand, as a journalist who was raised up to think that that Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein were the heroes of the profession because of the work they did, there's an inclination on my part to say, you know, okay, I'm glad that Woodward is still plying his trade, although his trade has become writing books really more so than newspaper articles and giving commentary more than being a reporter. But you know what
and
was
selling whalebone corsets?
That's you know the admirable thing in my memory as a journalism student years ago in college. The admirable thing about Woodward and Bernstein and All the President's Men was not so much that it brought down the Nixon administration or whatever role it had in doing that. The admirable thing was the doggedness with which it was portrayed that they had to get verification and corroboration on every piece of information, and how the publisher of the Washington Post would say, I am not going to press with this. You need to go back and get another source that can confirm that this happened. That was exciting to me. There was young journalists used to froth at the mouth over the idea of truth that was verifiable and that you could go to press with and feel confident in it. And now the game has become trust in the journalist himself and just hoping that he's accurately reporting this, and that let's attribute all possible good motives and high morals to Bob Woodward. He's still a man. He can still louse it up. He can still be influenced by his own biases. He can still tilt a story without even knowing he's tilting a story. And that was the reason for all the checks and balances, not only in our government, but in the so-called Fourth Estate. It was those checks and balances of editors who would look over a reporter's story and say, you don't have enough to take this to press. Now anything's good enough. In fact, ironically, Bob Woodward himself apparently said that the recently published op-ed by the anonymous so-called senior Trump administration official that said he was part of the inner White House, the administration resistance that was trying to save America from Donald Trump, Bob Woodward himself said he wouldn't go to press with that, that it didn't meet his standard. Well, I think, Bob, you may not be meeting your standard anymore.
Yeah.
And I think it is too much to ask me as the reader to just trust you. I think, if anything, a good journalist wants a healthy skepticism on the part of the readers. A good journalist wants the reader to demand corroboration. A good journalist wants to be in pursuit of truth in a way that the public can see. A good journalist who cries out for transparency among politicians ought to exercise a little bit of that himself. For Bill Whittle and Stephen Green, I'm Scott Ott. Thanks to the members at BillWhittle.com for making Right Angle possible.